Sausage, baby sausage. Obviously, my presentation has changed. Hence, you know, the title that you see on the slide there. Over the last 15 years, sausages have risen to prominence as a stored product pest all over the world. And quite a bit of information has been published in literature in relation to the control of stored product sausages. But there's very little information that is available regarding, you know, their biology and ecology. So some of the work that we're doing at Oklahoma State University relates to trying to fill these gaps. So what are sausages? They belong to an insect order, Socoptera, which is a pretty small order when you compare it to the beetle order, Coleoptera, which is about 350,000 species. Problem sausages mostly come from two families, family Trogidae and Liposalidae. Sausages are soft-bodied insects, which are also called book lice or back lice. Those are some of the common names that have been given to them. But really, one of the key distinguishing features for sausages is that they possess a large clypeus on the head, that is indicated by the arrow there. There are quite a few attributes that make sausages serious stored product pests. The first being, you know, they're very small in size, so that means by the time you notice them, the populations are very high. Most of the species only have females, and that means it's very easy for them to establish in new environments. All it takes is just a single egg or a single female. And then if you couple that with the fact that they're extremely hardy and they can live for a long time under adverse conditions without food, that obviously also improves, you know, the ability to be able to establish in new environments. For insects their size, the longevity is quite high. Can go up to about 5 months. Fecundity also is very high. And the population doubling time is just about a week. And lastly, but not least important, is the fact that they're quite tolerant, or they develop tolerance, you know, to insecticides that are present and are used to control stored product pests. Like I mentioned earlier on, over the last 15 years, sausages have risen to prominence as a serious stored product pest, and there are a number of reasons that have been suggested for this rise to prominence. The first of this is phosphine, which is the fumigant which is commonly used to control stored product pests, is quite effective in controlling beetle pests, but not as effective in controlling sausages. And it's also known, or it's been suggested, that beetle pests heavily predate on sausages. So once you knock off, you know, the beetles, you release the sausages from predation pressure, and that leaves, you know, the population, you know, the ability to be able to explode. And indeed, some of the work that we've done out of our lab and with some of my colleagues at the Grain Marketing and Production Research Center over in Manhattan, Kansas, has shown that when you have sausages coexisting together with beetles like red flower beetle and confused flower beetles, under those circumstances, their populations can be 50 times lower than when you have just the sausages alone. The other reason that has been suggested for the rise of sausages to prominence is the fact that they have natural tolerance to a lot of the grain protectants that are used to try to manage them out there. And a work by Manoj Nayak out of Australia has actually documented this. And also, sausages are resistant to phosphine. And the mode of resistance here, again, out of the work that's been done by Manoj Nayak, actually is delaying egg hatch when they're exposed to phosphine. And then, of course, lastly, the rise to prominence also has been attributed to the fact that markets are increasingly recognizing sausages as contaminants. So some of the research we're doing in relation to sausages at Oklahoma State University relates to identifying sausage species that are present in the Stillwater, Oklahoma area. We're trying to determine the seasonal abundance of these sausages. We're investigating interactions between sausage species and other stored product pests, and are looking at the effects, of those interactions on the population dynamics of these insects. We're also involved in assessing, various control options, and lastly, developing sampling protocols for sausage. So I'll just talk a little bit about, the sampling studies to determine seasonal distribution that we're conducting in Stillwater. There were three sites that we sampled. There was a feed mill where we had five locations sampled, and in each of these locations we had five positions where five refuges, which are the sampling units, were placed in each position. The second site was an animal feed warehouse. Again, we had four locations there, and like in the previous case, five positions with the refuge in each position. And then we sampled steel bins, which contain wheat. And these were two 500 bushel bins. And again, in this particular case, we had 20 refuges which were placed on each bin. And we had temperature and relative humidity sensors in each of the locations. We also collected beetle data, but I'm not going to be talking about the beetle data today. I'll just focus on the sausages. So the unit we're using for sampling is a corrugated cardboard trap, which you can see placed in this position and on top of the grain. So we identified a total of eight different species in the Stillwater, Oklahoma area. Lipocellis boschicophila, Lipocellis dicala, Lipocellis pita, Lipocellis entomophila. Lipocellis dicala, Lipocellis piamani, Lipocellis rufa, and Lepnotus radiculatus. While I worked over the GMPRC in Manhattan, Kansas, we also did sampling, but there were two species that we did not find in the sampling that we were conducting in Oklahoma yet, and these are Lipocellis brunea and Lipocellis corydens. So again, we sampled the feed mill, and there were four locations. The first location was the store of the feed mill, and as you can see here, a relatively clean area where they kept mostly utensils and the medicines that they were using, the feed mill. So that was relatively clean, very little food dust there. We also sampled the mill area. As you can see, of course, plenty of food for insect pests such as sausages. The basement was the same story, plenty of food. And also sample, the top of the feed mill. And this was about like three stories high. And one of the things I wanted to pay attention to, when it rains in this particular place, as you can see, there are leaks, and sometimes, water accumulates. And then one of these refuges we placed just next to that. And this will become important when I address the issue of the sausage numbers that we're finding in some of these positions. So some of the data on the sausage numbers that were sampled, so there was a little bit of disparity in the numbers gotten in different locations. As you can see here, these three locations had high numbers of sausages, but in the store, like I mentioned earlier, there was really very little food available for the sausages. It was generally relatively clean. So that will explain why low numbers are found there. And if you also look carefully, there seems to be a peak in populations around the June period, and then also around September. So there seem to be two population peaks, essentially. As far as percentages in the various locations, the basement, the mill, and the top had similar percentages of sausages, and again, the store had the lowest numbers. If you break this down by the species that we found in the feed mill, we found six different species, but predominantly these species belong to Lipocellis dicala. Now, looking at the data a little bit in more detail, you look at the various positions in the mill area. Again, you see disparity in numbers, with most of the sources coming from position M1 and M5. So even within a small area, you find that the difference is in sourcing numbers. Again, if you want to look at this in terms of percentages, like I mentioned, M5 had the highest percentage, with position M3 having, you know, the lowest percentage there. This was even more pronounced when you looked at the positions at the top, about three floors up. Predominantly, most of the associates are found in position T2 here, and in position T5, there was pretty much a very low number of sources found. Again, by percentage, T2 63%, T5 3%. And again, going back to that slide, you can probably see why this is going on. The relative humidity that is being created by the pools of water that are accumulating there may be contributing, you know, to the high source populations that are being trapped at that particular position. Looking at the weather data from the various locations, beginning with temperature, we can see when these are plotted over time, it is an inverted U for temperature, with the peak occurring around about August. And when you relate that to the relative humidity data, you find that that peak corresponds to when there is a dip in relative humidity there. And looking at this graph a little bit more critically and excluding the basement, you can see there are two peaks of relative humidity, one peak happening around June, another peak happening in the September-October period. And again, if you try to tie that to the numbers of sources, what we saw there, there appear to be two peaks. There seems to be a match, okay, with the peak happening in June and another peak happening in September. Okay. So the sampling we did at the animal feed warehouse, again, four locations. Essentially, could break down the animal feed warehouse into two sections. This top section here was where they kept a lot of the bagged product, which was coming from other locations. It was bagged in other locations and just brought to the warehouse to be sold. But really the interesting part was, you know, this bottom area here, where the warehouse did their own bagging and stored, you know, whatever was bagged within the warehouse. So because of the bagging process, there was a lot of food dust that was happening, and so there was food dust all over the floor, and obviously provided a lot of nutrition and food for the sausages. Looking at the east, what was mostly kept here were all kinds of animal feed, mineral supplements and all. And then also you got a lot of food debris, but a lot of this food debris was really old. I wonder how many years it has been there. Okay. Going to the north, you can see relatively clean. A lot of the stuff that was kept here was not really accessible to sources as food. Like here you have a lot of metal, and a lot of the products that were kept here were really in tightly sealed containers, and that would not be accessible to sausage. Okay. Going to the western location, here we had mostly grain seed, and again, slightly relatively clean compared to the south, which I'm going to be getting to here. You can see there was plenty of fresh food here, and here is the bagging area that I was referring to earlier. So this machine, you know, gets the bags, they land on this rotating system there, and then of course they're stacked. If you look at the floor here, I mean, it's all loaded with food dust. So again, there was a big disparity in numbers of sources that were found in the various locations. In the north, like I mentioned, very little food that could be available to sausages. Numbers were very low. You got the south, where there was an abundance of food, plenty of sources captured there. Again, you have these two population peaks, you know, happening in June and in September. Percentage-wise, in the south, 81% of all the sources that were sampled were found in the south. As far as species are concerned, we got seven different species in the warehouse, predominantly Lipocelis decala, just like in the feed where in the animal, sorry, in the feed mill. Okay, so decala was the most predominant species there. Looking in detail at the positions in the south, the five different positions in the south, again you can see here a big disparity in the numbers that were found, with most of the sources being found in strictly one location. Okay. So most of the sources were found in location S5, and again you can see clearly, looks like there are two population peaks happening at those two periods. And if you want to look at that by percentage, position S5 had 82% of the sources that were samples. And again, that position S5 was around this area here, and that is where most of the source seeds were found. And again, here we're getting like about 800 source seeds per cardboard refuge, which is about 9 by 13, you know, centimeters. And when they're packing stuff here, one can't help but wonder how many of the sources are getting in the bags together with the food, and they're just being, you know, sealed in. Okay, especially the batches that are packed first thing in the morning, because the sources, we know sources climb. So they're climbing all over the machinery, the workers come in, they just get these babies going, and I'm sure, you know, sources, you know, get in the bags as well. So does this happen in flour mills as well? That's an open question. So looking at this data again, this is now the weather data. Again, if you look at, you know, the temperature, an inverted U when that is plotted with the peak of the U here happening in August. And looking at, you know, the relative humidity, again, there are two peaks. Okay, one peak in June, another peak in September. And one of the things I wanted to pay attention to here, you look at the relative humidity peak that is happening in June here. It always happens when the temperature is relatively higher compared to the relative humidity peak that is happening around September here when the temperature is lower. And again, so first of all, the population peaks are corresponding with those peaks in relative humidity. But if you look at this peak in population, it's a little bit higher than this peak that is happening in September. So again, maybe that temperature thing there is playing some part in determining, you know, the height of these peaks. So that is something I think that is interesting. We also sampled two steel beans, like I mentioned earlier. These were 500 bushel beans. And I'm going to divide, you know, the sampling that was done to beans into three different periods. There was the April-May period where we did the sampling, and this was being done on old wheat. This was wheat which was put there in 2006 and 2007. And I also want to point out that bean 2 was leaky. Some work had been going on in that bean, and one of the holes which was made on the roof wasn't really properly sealed. So when precipitation came in, some water was getting the bean. So we expected, you know, the relative humidity to be higher in bean 2 compared to bean 1. The second sampling period was June to mid-July. And this is when the beans had been emptied of the old wheat, and then they were treated with Tempo. And the last sampling period was August, November, when beans had been filled with the new wheat. That was the 2008 wheat. Again, we're using the refuges on the 500 bushel beans. Clearly, you can see here bean 2 had an exponential growth in source seed numbers within, you know, that short period in which we're sampling. And again, like I mentioned earlier, that was the leaky bean. So looks like relative humidity is really doing something here. If you look at this by numbers of by the different types of source seed species that were found there, we found four different species. In that bean 2, which had the highest numbers of source seeds, Lepnodus reticularis, Dicala, Entomophila, and Rufa. And as you can see here, exponential growth in Dicala populations. We see also an increase in Rufa populations. We see a small increase in reticularis populations as well. And another interesting thing to note here, early in the sampling period, Entomophila did not feature at all. But as it started to get warmer, we start to see Entomophila appearing. And I think this is going to become important a little bit later on. So looking at, you know, the numbers of the different species that were trapped in that first sampling period by percentage, predominantly Dicala. And again, keep your mind on this percentage here. Pretty high for Dicala for this first sampling period. So then we treated the beans with Tempo, and we can see here the treatment occurred at that point, and then gradually in both of the beans, you know, the numbers of source seeds came down. The beans were then filled with new wheat around about that time. Looking at, you know, this drop in numbers, you know, by species, when you look at bean 1, when the Tempo was applied, very quickly, three of the species really got knocked down to zero. apart from the color, which remained, and that its numbers kept going down until the bins were filled. In bin two, only recreators got knocked down to zero, but the other three species kind of persisted to very low numbers when the bins were filled. So then we put in the new wheat, like I said earlier on, in mid-July. And you can see how quickly after the wheat is put in that the numbers go down, go up in both of the bins. Within a period of about close to a month, you know, the numbers in the traps that we're collecting were getting to about 15,000 in, you know, the cardboard refuges. But because the numbers of lesser grain borers in the wheat was also going up, we had to fumigate at that point. Okay, so we applied, you know, phosphine there. But again, just after about 2 weeks of phosphine application, you can see, you know, the associate numbers began going up very rapidly again. Okay, actually after about a month, okay, because there was a point here when it was zero. So we just had that one point when the numbers dropped to zero right after the application of phosphine, then they just shot up abruptly. But of course, because it was getting a little cooler, the numbers did not continue to increase dramatically. Looking at this by bins and by species that were found at different bins, we can see exponential growth of both Dicala and Thermophila. Interesting that Rufa again is featuring at the, sometime in September. After the application of the phosphine, we see the populations of both Dicala and Thermophila going up. But what is interesting in this particular case, if you look at both bin 1 and bin 2, is that the color seems to be doing much better as the temperatures get a little cooler, whereas Entomophila is going down. And remember what I told you earlier on when we were sampling, you know, the old wheat, you know, the color was the most predominant species when it was a little bit cooler. Okay. So we just have the temperature relative humidity data here up to September. Not all of it was plotted, but again, a similar kind of pattern like we saw in the feed mill and the warehouse, where you get in August, there's a peak in temperature in the bins, except it occurs at a high temperature. Then you get, you know, your relative humidity peak also happening in June. Looking at, you know, the predominance of the associated species in the two bins, we see here Entomophila was really predominant in bin one, constituting about 64%, you know, of the sources that were sampled, with the color constituting about 36%. In bin two, Entomophila ruled pretty much 99.4% of the sources. So again, remember earlier on it was the color that was really doing very well earlier on, when, you know, the temperature was a little lower and relative humidities were relatively higher. Okay, so again here in the bins it was Entomophila which was the most predominant species. So in our conclusion, really, we identified eight species altogether in the Stillwater, Oklahoma area. The color was predominant in two of the sites, that was the feed mill and the warehouse, whereas Entomophila was highly predominant in the bins. Numbers were highly variable among sites, locations, and positions. Numbers were higher in areas of food abundance, and probably we could use sanitation, you know, for the management of sources. It looks like, you know, high temperatures and relative humidities favor associate population growth, you know, from all this data. Two population peaks in June and September, and this coincide with the relative humidity peaks. Dicala seems to thrive under moderate temperatures and relative humidity, whereas Entomophila seems to thrive under high temperature and low relative humidity. Again, conclusion is that tempo was probably effective, but the effects appear to be delayed. Last but not least, associate populations rebound rapidly after phosphine treatment. And before I finish off here, I want to acknowledge two members of our team, Lee Jiang and Randy Bibi, who helped us with all the technical aspects of this. And at this point, I'll be willing to take questions if I have time.
We have time for maybe one or two questions.
Yes. Oh yes, it is a lot. That's why I get paid. Yeah, it is a lot of work, to put it simply. Wow. Yeah, and I'm going to change glasses soon as well.
Any other questions for George?
Okay.